Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Jesse Buckley and Paul Mescal are the two hottest actors in the world right now. They've both been nominated for Golden Globes for their new movie Hamnet, in which Paul plays William Shakespeare and Jesse plays his wife Agnes. They're also both being tipped for Oscars, as is the film. Everyone is absolutely raving about them and about this film, Hamnet. So I was delighted to talk to them when they were in Dublin last week. Jesse Buckley and Paul Mescal, hello.
Hi.
Welcome to the show and welcome home and happy Christmas and well done on your beautiful new film, Hamnet. And congratulations as well. You've both been nominated for Golden Globes. Is it nice?
It's lovely, yeah.
It's lovely.
Do the families still get excited?
They do,
these
yeah.
Roles?
Yeah.
Like in
yeah.
Newton, Kerry, yeah. 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 Who wants to tell me what the film is about?
You can go.
The film is about a great love that exists between two people that then build a family together. It's about what
art.
It's about art. It's about what we do with that love. What happens when we lose someone that we love? It's about grief. It's about
how we find expression. How we find places to express the things
yeah.
that we can't. Like hold on our own anymore,
mm-hmm.
and well, and this is it's the beginning of the of where Hamlet, the play, maybe as
came from.
Yeah, I think it was genuinely a profound experience for both of you making this film, was it?
Absolutely,
oh, yeah,
yeah, no question.
Yeah.
Why?
Because I met someone in Jesse that outside of just. It felt like something that superseded a professional thing. It was an inspiring collaboration and a friendship that happened kind of instantly in the woods in Wales. And that they're just, it's rare. It's a rare thing. And also we got to make something. Because oftentimes you have collaborations that feel very full, but the film might kind of go sideways. Whereas this is one that both things. I've met a collaborator and a friend that is incredibly important to me, and I've also made a film that, when the dust settles on everything, when I'm finished, I'll look back at this and be unbelievably proud of what we made together.
Yeah.
Jesse, I hope you feel the same about
me. Better.
Oh dear, this will be awkward.
Yeah. Right.
See you later, guys.
Who cares? Who cares?
So did you know each other at all?
We did a little bit
yeah.
Like, because we were in the same film together, The Lost Daughter, but we never did anything
yeah.
together. And just from being Irish, we knew each other. But
mm-hmm.
I think I didn't know him like I know him now. And he is somebody that I feel like I've met a journeyman, you know, that I'm going to travel through my life and have very important, significant moments with Paul as an actor and as a friend.
Why do you feel that?
Because, I mean, we both have been incredibly lucky to work with extraordinary people,
mm-hmm.
and they've all brought different aspects out of me as a actor and as a storyteller. With Paul, I think from the moment we started working together on this, we were equal. And there was a lot of trust and a lot of care, which actually meant that we could go as deep and as bravely and into an absolute unknowability of each other that was so alive. And to get that kind of container in a relationship and in a working relationship is very, very rare. And the material also allowed us, and we were being held by Chloe Zhao, who's
yeah.
an absolute master of film. Making to, I guess, get a little bit more human, you know,
yeah.
to not act, to actually be. And often there's fear when you come to set, you know, it's a very vulnerable thing
yeah.
to try and express the most heightened parts of what it is to be alive as a human. And sometimes they're so isolated and you're in a trailer and you come to work and they're like, okay, go. But
yeah.
actually, this had so much connective tissue that it meant that you could go so to just another place, you know.
So how did it happen initially, so that you obviously created a very safe psychological space for each other, so there must be a real bond of trust. How did that grow?
People ask this question. There was nothing that we did. It just
You went on the piss, though, did you?
We did in New York, but that definitely wasn't the reason that...
That's the classic Irish shortcut to intimacy.
We'll have another one.
Come on!
No, from the moment we did a chemistry read, like which often happens, you know, if you're doing a film where I guess the director wants to get a sense if this is the right match or not, mm-hmm. or if there's what she's imagined in her head is there. And I think because we both knew each other and deeply respected each other's work, but there was just an element of surprise and trust. And sometimes it's just undeniable. There's a kinetic, like... This has a very specific kinetic energy, you know.
Yeah.
This love that you see on screen, how much we love each other as people, is just unique to us. And I don't know, there's no way to describe it. It just is what it is.
But I do think we entered it at the perfect point where it was, as you were saying, this knowing each other, but there was big pockets of you that I hadn't even, I didn't understand yet. And we it felt like we were discovering that on camera, and Jesse's so extraordinarily brave that I think it allowed me to feel like, oh, we're not doing any of the pretending to, we're not, it was like we were trying to remove any kind of feeling of acting from the whole thing. It was just like, created, and Chloe was brilliant at that, she created a little bubble around us that like is very difficult on a set when there's cameras and lights going, but it did feel like, it's the closest I've felt to a kind of being almost like meditative or kind of actually managing to remove the artifice of the filmmaking process, and that's because we were curious about each other and what we wanted to like discover about the two of them.
So it actually melts away.
Yeah,
it is.
And actually becomes something very simple, something very simple, you know. And it meant that every take was very different. None of us knew where any of us were going to go.
Mm.
But there was so much potential for it to be something sometimes really quiet, you know. Like, actually to sit in silence and and there's a lot of this film, especially at the end, there's nothing being said between us, but there's oceans being felt and said just in how we see each other. And that's actually more powerful. Like, and that's what it felt like. There was just so much being said without any words a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So tell me about Chloe Zhao then and how she created that safe space for the two E. So she is neurodiverse, which she says she needs authenticity. Basically, she can't tolerate inauthenticity. So that's the first stage of it, presumably.
I don't think it's just her neurodiversity that actually demands authenticity or presence. I think that's what she actually is. Like, she is so alert and like sensitive and almost like an animal in the world, you know, as an artist. She's an uncompromising artist. And
Absolutely.
That's why her work, everyone knows and can feel Chloe Zhao's texture and singularity, because she is an absolute singular artist and how her process is uncompromising about that. It isn't about ego. It's actually about creating a community and a village. And she wants everybody to be, And I guess the people that she invites into the story, she demands, like, she wants them to really need to tell this story. So everybody's coming on this venture into this space. She then creates a village for all the imaginations to really, like, exist. And then she really, demands that we all drop down and listen and be as present to the moment as possible. She's not, if something, she might have an idea the night before, and then come in, and it just doesn't feel alive to her. It's gone.
It's gone, yeah.
And so you're constantly alive in the space.
Did she bring as well a dream worker onto the set to get you in touch with your subconscious? Is that right? Or am I misunderstanding?
No, that was Jess. You worked with Kim first.
Yeah, we had a woman called Kim Gillingham, who's like a dream guide rather than a coach. And really, all it was about starting to become aware of your dreams, because your dreams can be a very unconscious kind of
signaling to you.
Exactly, to where you're living in the world. I often find anytime I open a book, I go to the cinema, I start opening a script and exploring a character, you start looking at the world differently, your unconscious is alive in the world differently, and if it's really cooking, my dreams start being signals in a very abstract way of the world that I'm entering. And mm-hmm. she worked with us individually. She worked with 300 extras in the globe and asked them to kind of drop into an unconscious part of themselves that needed to be let go of in within grief. And it was again, like with Chloe, it was about being in your body, you know, getting out of your head, connecting to your body, connecting to the people around you. And a language that is kind of been lost within storytelling. Mm-hmm. You know, the language of dreams, the language of Shakespeare, of poets. I mean, Ireland is profound at this. It's something very ancient. It is the language of archetypes and dreams and mythology that I think nowadays storytelling can often be kind of cooked as within like an risklessness and an ego and fear, and we must, and you anyway, I've got lost now what I'm
no,
saying.
No, not
you know
at
what I'm
all.
Saying?
Yeah, and did your dreams start to work in sync with the work you were doing during it?
You're
nodding, really?
Yeah, no, it was so. It gave me such confidence when we were working, because it just meant that, like, you're not intent. Like, when you go to sleep, you're not intentionally choosing to think about anything. Your brain is just process, and you're spending your whole day thinking or attempting to think or feel like another person. So, of course, that will percolate. And what's amazing about the work with Kim is that, like, when you're actively practicing it, like, I'm not practicing that process as much at the moment, and I'm not remembering my dreams as much. Yeah. When we were on Hamlet, I was remembering.
Oh, we'd get in the morning and be like, this mad dream last night.
We dreamt about a cow in the same week, me and Jesse. It was bananas.
Really, yeah. Well, so, Paul, it sounds like this was a big learning experience or breakthrough for you or something, was it?
Yeah.
It sounds like everything's different after.
Totally.
Film.
It's been a totally different process, because I think, the quality of the work with Kim, I think, brought me and Jesse incredibly close. And then ultimately, I think, whatever the process was, it translated, most importantly, into the work that we made. Like, we didn't leave anything on the pitch. It was the feeling that we were kind of, like, was so rich between us. Mm-hmm. It was captured. So whatever we were doing, and I'm just trying to hold on to that. But everything changes. Like, I don't think I would aim to recapture exactly what we did on Hamlet, because it's different jobs.
You couldn't,
different
you couldn't
you
be
couldn't
doing
do
this
it.
All the time. You'd be worn out, wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly.
It sounds like it was obviously an intense time. Yeah. Was it how long for?
9 weeks, 10 weeks.
Yeah, it was intense.
And completely immersed.
It was.
Yeah, but it was so joyous.
Yeah.
Even on top, like, there's obviously incredibly difficult moments in the film that, like, Anya's and myself have to go through, but the feeling was one of, like, great catharsis and joy and inspiration. Yeah.
And people often, it was hard. It really wasn't. Like, it was an absolute privilege, you know. These moments and these stories and the team and creative team, these things do not come around, you know. Like, and that kind of collision of your life meeting a story like that is... Well, I mean, I may never do something like this ever again in my life, or have a moment like an experience like this again in my life. And it woke me up. It definitely woke me up to remind myself of what it is to tell a story, what our jobs are as artists to tell stories, and actually the journey you can, if you want and need to go on, to actually discover something else about what it is to be alive, mm-hmm. you know?
So it's a difficult one off the top of the head. Now, what did you discover about yourself or about being alive?
I think the thing that I didn't realize I needed to or was going to discover in this, but I desperately wanted in my life, was tenderness. And I think being in the body of this woman who I really responded to and recognized, and I guess in that, you know, I'm a strong woman, she's a strong woman, and sometimes within that strength there's a kind of projected idea and a defense system that you build up around yourself about that strength, but within that strength comes a hell of a lot of longing and need for love. Mm-hmm. And the love that I experienced in this cracked my heart into a tenderness that has made me braver. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't not And I think, you know, it was also around motherhood. I really wanted to become a mother at the time. Yeah. I wasn't a mother at the time while I was shooting it, and I am now. And just the love, the amount of love that can be contained when you meet somebody who can love all of you. Mm. And that both strength and tenderness can be alive in the same. And tenderness is ferocious, you know. Don't underestimate tenderness.
Yeah, yeah. So you were just the tough side of things before that, maybe, or?
I don't think I was. It wasn't tough. I mean, I was curious about, I've always been curious about, in the women I've played, the shadow bits that aren't allowed up to the top layer, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe the harder bits, you know, the bits that are societally unappealing or uncomfortable about being a woman or being a mother in the world. I've always been wanting to get to know those shadow bits and let them be seen in the culture and in the stories that I've told. And I hadn't met a character until I met Agnes who was able to actually hold the shadow and the light, like be strong and tender. And I think the landscape of what a mother is epic. And this woman has an epic landscape inside of her, and she has contact with something that is rooted within nature and within her own mortality, with love and loss. And I think I was waiting to meet a character like her to allow me to have access and recognize those parts of myself again.
And then you finished the film and you found out pretty much straight away that you were going to have a baby. It must have seemed like weird and wonderful and poetic, did it?
I was a bit spooky.
The chakra has got unblocked.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, you know.
Yeah.
These things, I don't know, they have their own ways of working.
So obviously grief is central to it, and how Shakespeare and Agnes process it differently. Tell me a bit about that, Paul. Is it about men and women and how they might grieve differently?
I think it's definitely commenting on that. But I think you can only really comment on it broadly if you invest in the specifics of two individuals.
Yeah.
Because of course the film isn't trying to say that this is how men are and this is how women are. But what it is saying is that there is. The part of the film I find so moving is it's like the film is also an exercise in frustration and an exercise in patience. It's like you see and you feel an audience's frustration. They share that and deep sadness when we see Will leave. And if we didn't see the other side of that picture, we would just assume that he's kind of deserting something. But when you, in the kind of final act of the film, when you see the reason that he's going away isn't to escape. And it's not saying that both that it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But it's saying we have to be patient with each other to really invest in the love that we have in relationships, friendships, marriages, that we don't really fully know. We think we might know our partners but we don't really fully know. And you've got to hold a little bit more space than you think to allow people to surprise you. And I think when
it's
you
a
see
bit like
watching,
an Irish dad, isn't it?
Totally,
it does seem like that she's there completely, like, you know, consumed with the grief and expressing it. And we think he wasn't totally there, and then he heads off and he seems to be gone back into have to get on with things, lads, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But actually,
he's a volcano about to erupt because it's so painful. And I think the thing that when you see Agnes and Will see each other, the fact that, like, this relationship has gone through the ringer and come back, and there's this moment of like
reckoning, recognizing,
and like it's not that anything is solved or fixed, but there is just like there's a loyalty that I find so moving about it. There's a like understanding. There's a patience that Agnes affords Will. There is also the fact that we wouldn't have had this incredible piece of art had he not gone away. I don't think.
Yeah.
And like that poses an interesting question to the audience,
which is
like,
right?
What? It's not about right or wrong. It's like the perspective is everything. It's like he is wrong entirely in certain moments and he is right entirely in certain moments. And she is right. It's about the complexity of the human condition, especially in moments of grief. And I just remember feeling so panicked when that was happening. Like when we were filming those things or reading the story, I was like, oh, I want him to be at home with his family. But of course, I understand that feeling of like, I have to run away here. I have to get out of this place because I can't. I don't want to be seen. Does that make sense? You don't want to be seen to be grieving, and there's a weakness in that, but there's also.
And then that's also in the end when they do see each other and they're able to actually, like, consume and see each other's grief is so powerful. I remember we were filming that last bit, and we were trying. You know, a lot of the ending was being discovered as we were shooting it. You know, there was no hands reaching out. There was no Hamlet, you know, returning to the stage. The camera, we were just finding the language of that last.
You were literally figuring that out.
Yeah. And I remember there's a few.
So what, were you all lost a bit?
Yeah.
Does that happen? Yeah.
Oh, God, all the time. Jesus, nearly every day on set. But those are always the most interesting moments because then, you know, actually, when it takes time to really find something, it means that something bigger is trying to get through. But I remember the first.
Where did it come from then? How does it bubble up? How do you see? Oh, this is what's supposed to happen.
Curiosity,
and then sometimes actually sitting in the uncomfortable bit of it is exactly the story. You know, being lost is one of the most human things we all feel. You know, and how brave can I be to show that I'm lost right now? And even searching, like there was a lot of the beginning of those days where we could not see each other and we were dying to see each other because there was a camera in our way. And like, you also have to acknowledge, okay, Chloe needs to get this shot, but I have to see Paul. Yeah. Like, if I can't see him in this moment,
then the whole
I don't know what it's going to, like, you're going to, you can get and maybe, but you might miss the, like, heartbeat of it, you know.
We went and reshot it, though.
We did.
This is the very ending.
When Jess goes, look at me, and it's calling back to the marriage scene. And Chloe and Lukasz wanted a very tight eye line to camera, so you're essentially, I'm supposed to be looking at Jesse, but I'm looking at the corner and vice versa. And it just felt, and that was not the norm on set at all. It was all normally about connection. And whereas with that moment, it just felt incredibly wrong. And when we reshot it again, we're actually able to connect to each other.
But even the need, the like searching, you know, that is what is in that story at the end.
They're trying to find each other.
Yeah. She's trying to find why the hell would her husband steal the most painful thing that's happened to them and share it with a group of strangers? Like, how dare he? Until she realizes that he is the most genius magic trick in the whole world. And actually he's reincarnated their son right in front of their eyes and created a vessel for everybody who is around her, who also has come in with an unspoken hidden grief that they will never speak about each other. I mean, that's what I felt when I was doing it. You know, there was a midwife on my right, there was another woman on my left, and by the end, because Chloe had created an environment where these 300 extras, she invited their grief to be part of this story. And I was holding up this midwife on my right, and there's a man behind me who had tears running down his face.
No way.
He was like, I haven't cried for 5 years. And I'm at the lip of the stage, and I'm feeling this like tsunami of emotion behind me. And nobody needs to talk about it, but we're all holding it together.
Yeah.
And then you have this magic trick of what a story is, what Hamlet is, why we go to the cinema, why we go to the theater, why we need music, why we need books, is that we need these vessels to just transcend,
to communicate these feelings
and hold the parts of ourselves that we can't hold on our own.
Amazing. Do you guys miss each other now?
So much.
Okay, Jesse Buckley, Paul Mescal, thank you so much. That was a beautiful conversation. That was amazing.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Email brendan@rte.ie.